beneath the smoke-filled sky. 2 million people behind the ghetto wall. Wait for 2-ton bombs to fall, to crush and burn the schools and tents where your whole extended family went. Scores more murdered with each passing day, with so many more on the edge of being taken away. Surrounded by tanks that fire at will, and the rest of the world stands by still. Completely surrounded with no food getting in. Ghost-like faces, impossibly thin. Kids that look like babies, babies bored. Thirsty, starving, and forlorn. Then being taken to who knows where. The elderly, the children, the wounded in chairs. With donkey carts and wagons south on cue. As the drones above the rubble order them to do. They're carrying out the general's plan, which means kill all the kids that you possibly can. Anyone moving, soldiers take aim. Who they are doesn't matter, they're all the same. Make no distinctions, orders decree. Killing them all is just how it must be. And right now in New Jersey, you can buy shares in the resort Jared Kushner plans to build there.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, that was David Rovick's there. David Rovick's album, Notes from the Holocaust, was unceremoniously pulled from Spotify last week. No reasons given, but it seems that the censorious urge has spread to that organization as well. Well, in recent weeks, the outgoing American president has signed off on the use of advanced U.S. missiles by Ukrainian forces against targets inside Russia. The launching of ATACMS rockets soon followed the Biden announcement last week, raising the stakes in the 2.5 years-long conflict to catastrophic dimensions. Or as Russian President Vladimir Putin dryly noted, the conflict had now acquired elements of a global character. Last week, Russia answered with devastating effect, debuting the so-called Oreshnik hypersonic missile, reportedly destroying the Ujamish weapons plant where ATACMS and other advanced Western weapons systems were stored. But if the Oreshnik was meant to deter their future use, it was less successful than the Kremlin might have hoped. Monday, 13 more ATACMS were launched against Russian targets in the Kursk region. John Hilmer is a journalist and author who spent decades living in and reporting from Russia. He's the principal behind the web news site Dances with Bears and has, as well as serving as advisor to governments at the highest level, too, been a professor of political science, sociology, and journalism. His article, The Ukraine War After the Penny Has Dropped, Make That the Oreshnik, examines the recent but not latest escalation in the war over there. Among John's many book titles are The Man Who Knows Too Much About Russia, The Lie That Shot Down MH17, the lately released autobiography Dunce Upon a Time, A Life of Mistakes, and Skripal in Prison, the first and perhaps only book to follow the Skripal saga from its beginnings. Welcome back to the program, John.
Thank you for having me, Chris, and big Thanksgiving greetings to our American listeners. I hope you'll accept that I'm speaking raw while you digest your roasted turkey. I understand that that advanced country of Canada has already had its Thanksgiving and understands things are getting worse now.
Yeah, well, we're thankful for what we have left. Well, John, if the Oreshnik was meant as deterrence against the ATACMS being launched, as I said, although you can correct me if I'm wrong, the Kremlin says it will, deterrence doesn't seem to have worked. The Kremlin says it's going to retaliate again against this latest barrage against the Kursk region. But John, do they have more Oreshniks ready for that? Or is that retaliation, have they announced, or do you know, going to take some other form?
Yes, there are Oreshniki, that's plural for Oreshnik, ready. and Kapustin Yar, the proving ground and test platform in southwestern Russia, where the first Oreshnik raid against Yuzhmash was launched on November 21. That's now being covered by a notice to Airmen and NOTAM. The notice will last until November 30th. President Putin is currently in Kazakhstan for 2 days of talks with the Kazakh leadership. I'm predicting, and you can check if I'm wrong, but my prediction is that there will be a Russian retaliatory raid or strike or set of strikes on Friday night or Saturday morning, Russia time, that's late November 29, early November 30th, Moscow time. But let's be clear, there are several things happening. You mentioned the Kremlin said there'd be retaliation. No, the Kremlin did not. And this is very important to understand about the way things are being discussed, debated, and decided in Moscow. It was the defense ministry, the Russian defense ministry, speaking for the general staff, which made an announcement 24 hours ago, which did some things that I've never seen before. Now, first, the Russian defense ministry announcement revealed that on the November 23rd, 2 days after the Oreshnik raid, there was an attack launch against a Russian anti-aircraft SAM missile site. There were casualties, although some say that the site was under maintenance, there were serious casualties. That was on November 23rd, as announced by the Russian Defense Ministry, at a location called Lotarevka in Kursk region. There was a second incident, the one you were referring to, Chris, on November the 25th, when there was an attack on a military airfield at Khalino, eight missiles fired the second time, five missiles attackers fired the first time, seven of the attacking eight on November 25th were shot down, according to the Russian Defense Ministry bulletin. But the Russian Defense Ministry went on to say retaliatory actions are being prepared, quotes. Now, that's signaling a punch. That has never happened before. I've never seen that signal from the Russian Defense Ministry and General Staff. And that tells us that either the General Staff are sandbagging the Kremlin, or there's a long-distance warning by both the General Staff and the Kremlin that as soon as President Putin returns to Moscow, there will be a new strike or strikes, whether they involve Oreshnik plural, or other missiles and other means, remains to be seen. There's no reason for the Russians to signal what they'll use and what targets they'll hit, but they will be hit. That's what the General Staff and the Defense Ministry have said. Now, there's also been breaking news in the United States. So let's be clear, there's obvious faction fighting, confusion and chaos in the new Trump administration. You've had Mike Waltz, a former Spetsnaz, a former U.S. Special Forces military person, becoming the National Security Advisor and announcing that he works hand in glove with the Biden administration's Jake Sullivan. We've had Sebastian Gorka, a Hungarian-American, who has described Putin with race-hate terms, returning to become deputy to Waltz at the National Security Council. We've had General Kellogg, just appointed, retired General Kellogg, Lieutenant General Kellogg, appointed Trump's special emissary for negotiations with the Ukraine. And we've had Pete Hegseth, a National Guard infantryman, appointed to become the defense secretary. Now, you've got four race haters there. You better add the Cuban-American Senator Rubio, who will become secretary of state. They've got people who hate Russia and who want to go to war. Each of them has a record of that. At the same time, what they're making a record of is significant differences between each other. They're of different ages. They're of different generations. Some have Reagan period experience. Others have are too young. And so you have indecision, confusion, overlapping and contradictory statements on the Trump side.
So now, John, as far as the Russians go, though, this bifurcation between the Kremlin and the defense ministry, you and I have talked about it before, and I still can't quite get it through my head that the two are not always working together. That seems to defy all logic and intuition. Is what I said, first of all, that the Oreshnik was meant as a deterrent, a weapon of deterrence?
Yes, it is. No doubt about that. And while it's normal politics, Chris, and Russia has normal politics, whether you describe what goes on in Washington as normal politics depends on how young you are, that it's normal for the military leadership to disagree with and debate with the political leadership because they're pursuing different priorities, let's say.
Certainly that, John, but not in the press, though, and especially during wartime. It seems counterproductive.
Russia has a more open press than the United States or Great Britain or Canada, and one does see differences of opinion. That's normal. It's democratic, you might even say. The issue is whether President Putin will agree to the second Oreshnik strike, which, or the retaliatory actions, which may or may not include an Oreshnik, a kinetic weapon of that type, a Friday night or Saturday morning. And if so, what are the targets? You can understand that it's normal military practice. I'm saying the obvious, to have prepared precise coordinates for a list of targets, probably at least 10, maybe 20, in some order of priority from a military point of view. At the top, there may be major military targets. For example, the targeting of these ATACMS raids in Kursk, November 23rd, 25th, that we've both mentioned, the targeting, the guidance, the firing mechanism, and the flight control, all of those are American, and they've all been aided in real time by probably AWACS aircraft or other forms of electronic aircraft, fixed-wing aircraft, probably based and in Germany, could have been based in Poland, refueled with U.S. Air Force tankers from Germany or Poland or possibly Romania. That's where the U.S. was operating to effect the November 23rd, November 25th raids or strikes by ATACMS. So the targets have been that could be for retaliation are those sites in Romania, Poland, and Germany, which directly facilitated those raids. I doubt that. There would be military targets inside the Ukraine and over the Black Sea, where the guidance systems operated by the British in the last few days, by the French, and also by the US Air Force drones. Those systems are used to guide attacks on Russia in the southern half of the Ukraine. In the middle of the country, in the Ukraine, you've got command centers with US and NATO officers in bunkers in Kiev and in Lvov and in the west of the country. To hit the west as distinct from the east, Yuzhmash plant is at Dnipropetrovsk. That's in the east, not very far west of the current line of contact, so that there's a list of targets. They have military priority because the Ukrainians hit so-called military targets in Kursk on Russian territory. One can expect a symmetry. That's to say the Russians will retaliate against military targets. Will they decide that the military staffs of the American and Ukrainian staffs headquartered in Kiev or in Lvov are comparable? Maybe they will. I don't know. It would be foolish to signal what one did know if one knew, but no one outside of that very important group, the general staff, the defense ministry, and the Kremlin, know. But if there is no retaliatory raid by Saturday, that would indicate that there is a difference of opinion that's delaying the Russian reaction. I don't think that's happening. Therefore, I think what will happen will be coordinated. I could be wrong. And by Saturday, everybody listening today will be able to say Helmer's wrong. But the strategic game change here has been noticed by some European analysts, some US analysts, some Canadian ones. And that is that a Reshnik, a hypersonic kinetic energy, highly precise targeted weapon, which cannot be intercepted by any technology the West has at the moment, represents a Russian alternative to escalating to nuclear weapons, as the US has steadily escalated, along with their British and French fellow travelers, in the Ukrainian platform in the war against Russia. So strategically, this new weapon and its and there are others, provides a capacity to strike with devastating force against targets, including the United States, because Russia has announced the capacity and the willingness to carry these weapons and base them in Chukotka in the Far East, which would bring them within range of Los Angeles and San Francisco. It's the capacity to respond with strategic deterrence at conventional, non-nuclear level. Now, the new Russian nuclear doctrine, which was announced and published after President Putin's signature last week, incorporates the idea of non-nuclear preemptive and retaliatory capacity in the event the other side, the West, the United States in particular, uses nuclear weapons or delivers them, weapons of mass destruction, which include biological and biochemical weapons, and weapons of this type with massive casualty capability, as well as retaliatory capacity as the U.S. escalates economic warfare. So there's a strategic change, and there's no sign that individuals like Waltz, Gorka, Kellogg, or Hegseth, the new Trump administration responsible for the war against Russia, the war against China, the war against Iran, and the war against the Arabs, there's no sign that this new Trump administration, let alone Trump, have understood and are coping with the strategic change or the change of strategic balance. At the tactical level, there's no sign on the part of the proponents of in the Biden administration, Blinken, Sullivan, and General Austin at the Pentagon have accepted that they are facing a more than parity, an overwhelming Russian power to resolve or end or bring the Ukrainian war to armistice and capitulation. There's no sign that the Biden administration folks or their French and British mouthpieces, Prime Minister Starmer or French Foreign Minister Barrot, have realized or understand that the tactical balance of power has shifted so decisively. Anything they put into the Ukraine, let alone drop onto Russian territory, can be countered with devastating accuracy and collateral damage. So it's very hard for me to interpret what is printed in Murdoch media and others, or the Japanese outlet called the Financial Times. It's very hard to interpret that operationally, what it means on the ground. So from a Russian point of view, however, what they say has to be treated as real and real threat. And the deputy UN representative of Russia said at the UN just yesterday, "You've made your choice." That's what he said to the allies. "You've made your choice, and we've warned you what we're going to do." It's pretty strong language. And so I think let's let Deputy UN Representative Polyansky answer your question. He said, "You, France, Britain, and the United States have made your choice. You're not going to be deterred. You want to escalate. Well, we have the non-nuclear capability to escalate beyond your capability to defend, and it's devastating. You've been warned." Yeah,
that's ominous indeed. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with John Helmer. John's a journalist and author. He spent decades living in and reporting from Russia and is the principal behind the web news site Dances with Bears. His latest article that we're talking around is the Ukraine war after the penny has dropped. Make that the Oreshnik. The Oreshnik, of course, being this new weapon debuted a couple of days ago. John, for people who don't, there's a lot of speculation. I don't know that anybody knows other than the people that are dropping them exactly what the weapon consists of. But it seems to be a retooled ICBM that goes into the outside of the atmosphere. And this is how it gains that terrific speed, the 10 Mach plus, that creates this immense kinetic energy that is so destructive. We've talked many times about the threat that the Russians feel to these cruise missiles, because they don't know that if the cruise missiles, the incoming missiles coming in, or even the ATACMS, they don't know if they might be nuclear-equipped missiles. Is not the same thing true here with these Oreshnik, if they are the intercontinental ballistic missiles?
They're coming... intermediate range. They're not intercontinental. They're intermediate range, which is up to 5,000 Ks.
Does this mean then that the same applies for the other side, that they have no way of knowing that these may or may not have nuclear warheads on them?
The other side, yes, could conclude that. But for the time being, the Russian side took the nuclear protection channel to warn the U.S. of a ballistic missile launch, which it didn't have to do since the U.S. walked away from the INF, the Intermediate Range Nuclear Treaty of 87-88. Didn't have to warn the U.S. It did warn the U.S. that the ballistic missile launch was underway. They warned 30 minutes before in order that the U.S. side would be assured it wasn't nuclear tipped. What happened was that, and this I think is understood at the Pentagon, and it's understood in the Russian military blogs as well as in the well-informed U.S. military blogs, that the weapon going at Mach 10 or 12 in the atmosphere and in space, 12, but 10 as it penetrated, goes deep into the ground, six independent vehicles releasing six warheads with a kinetic energy that had the capacity at the bunkers of the Yuzhmash plant to expand and destroy and reduce to dust everything there, people, equipment, stocked British and French and American missiles, and all the rest, reduced to dust without a single satellite picture being allowed to be shown of what the hole above looks like. It's a unique kinetic energy release without a nuclear or other form of explosion required to do that level of damage. But it could be nuclear tipped, you're right. Its range and its components, you used the term retooled, Chris, that has very serious political implication. The Americans, including Trumpies, want to say that Trump was right to walk away from, withdraw from the INF treaty in 2019 when he alleged that the Russians were in breach of that agreement. His allegation was never substantiated with any evidence, but both sides of the Trump anti-Russian or Russia war-fighting faction, the Waltz faction and the Gorka faction, want to say that the Oreshnik is simply a retooled version of earlier Russian missiles, and that therefore the Oreshnik raid proves Trump was right to leave the INF treaty because the Russians were in violation. I happen to think the evidence shows that they are lying, and that's false. Why? Because Oreshnik is not a retooled version, unless you take the absurd notion that Homo sapiens, us, we are a simply retooled version of Homo erectus. Are we or not? Depends on how long a history and how simple-minded you want to make the history of the technological, neurological development and evolution. I think Oreshnik is a new weapon system with some parts that have a history. That doesn't make Russia a violator of INF in 2019, but it does make Trump culpable in violating INF himself.
Well, yeah, and I remember, and some of our older listeners may too, that during the Reagan administration, the SDI, the Star Wars, as it came to be known, a part of that program was to send have these projectiles, these iron rods circling in satellites from space that could drop these projectiles at super high rates to create these kinds of kinetic effects, although they didn't have the kind of steerage or aiming capabilities, and the project was eventually just dumped anyway.
Well, you're right, Chris, and that's important to mention it and to remind people. That's because some of the Trumpies want to say that that level of missile development, U.S. missile development, though abandoned at the time, must be restarted. So you've got people at the incoming Trump Pentagon who want to restart those developments, who are talking semi-secretively about how we've got something that will more than match the Russians. We've got another new arms race coming, and the Trumpies, Waltz, Gawker, Rubio, and Hegseth are all lined up, ready to implement. And this has to be as concerning to Russians as they have been concerned about the Biden administration. So there'll be no love lost. There is already no love lost, no hope for a Trump administration, which has these Russia haters, race war fighters. But they are going, this new Trump lot will try to revive the hypersonic kinetic weapons of the Star Wars era from the Reagan administration. And there are several men, including General Kellogg, who date from the Reagan administration time and who set a record then of what they plan to do to the Russians if they get a chance. And now they've got their chance.
Well, they won't have their chance for many years. I don't think they're well behind even getting to the starting blocks in this race. John, sadly, we're out of time. We're going to talk again, hopefully, and get into this Gorka fellow. I would argue, John, that it's not Homo erectus that we were a poor evolution of, but maybe just the straight off monkeys, and not a particularly bright one at that, given the evidence of the day. But thanks a lot, John. Well, maybe we can talk about that
again. I would say that what we've got with the Trump appointments, especially Gawker, Waltz, Hegseth, and Kellogg, is Homo interruptus. And there's not a very long period of time for them to evolve before they meet a level of countervailing power, which from a Pentagon point of view, now and later, they must not meet. Pentagon folks and the U.S. military industrial complex cannot afford to lose a war at this technological level. If they lose this war demonstratively, they can't sell their weapon systems. And the U.S. imperium in Europe depends on making the rest of the world buy U.S. weapons. That is also destroyed by the kinetic energy deep in the ground. And reasonable Pentagon men, before Trump arrives and after Trump arrives, will argue we cannot afford such a test.
Well, time will tell, and we're out of time. John, thanks a lot for coming on again, and I want to thank Jeremy Kuzmarov over there at covertactionmagazine.com, davidrovics.com. Support him. Spotify has taken to erasing his work without explanation, although we all know that his album, The Race So Far, is Notes from the Holocaust, all songs about the ongoing genocide in Palestine. Thanks a lot, John, for coming on again, and I do hope we get a chance to talk again soon to flesh things out a little further.
Thank you, Chris.
That's all I got for this time. Until the next time.
And right now in New Jersey, you can buy shares in the resort Jared Kushner plans to build there.
Tokyo, New York, Guerrilla Radio is everywhere. Online at guerrilla-radio.com. Everywhere, all the time.
Chicago. Jakarta. Helsinki. Cape Town. Sao Paulo. Manchester. Bangalore. And somewhere in Russia, I can't actually remember the name of.
Community. Communication is everywhere, but what is it? Communication is how you share your thoughts, your opinions, your culture, from what you see on TV to what you post online. But what about the people who are not being seen or heard? AMI is a media company that strives to be a voice for Canadians with disabilities, whether it's through positive portrayal, reflection, and accessible media. AMI believes everyone should be included, and that includes you. AMI is inclusion. Experience AMI at amiplus.ca.